I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I'm so excited to have my next guest here. We have Shelley Zalis, who is the CEO of The Female Quotient, and I'm thrilled to see and hear all of the progress that they have made. I remember meeting Shelley a few years ago when she was first kind of getting going and hearing all of the progress that she's been able to not only make for the Female Quotient, but also for so many founders out there is just absolutely incredible. So in case you are not familiar with Shelley, she's an internationally renowned entrepreneur. She's been a journalist for Forbes. She's a TED speaker, a champion of gender equality, and today is the CEO of the Female Quotient. Shelley works with Fortune 500 companies and impact organizations to advance equality in the workplace. And so through their signature pop-up experiences known as the Equality Lounge, Shelley is known for creating an international community of women rising up to create lots of amazing, amazing change. So before starting the Female Quotient, we're going to get all into what she was up to, but just absolutely amazing experience as the only female CEO of a top 25 global research company. She's been called the chief troublemaker. That is one that I have not been given as a title, but I certainly would be quite proud to receive that. Very excited to have this conversation with Shelley. So without further ado, welcome Shelley.
I'm so excited to be here, and I am so inspired by you and all that you've done. And I remember that first moment that we met and you told me about Hint, and I was like, oh my God, genius. And we had you in one of our lounges, and of course, all the women were racing to grab their bottle of Hint, and we couldn't stock it fast enough. So, and where you are, where you've been, where you're going just always blows my mind. So happy to be here.
Well, so nice. And yeah, and I've been a part of, I was at Cannes, I guess, a few years ago. I was on one of your panels. Super, super fun. Everything that you're doing is just so, so inspiring. So let's talk for a moment about your upbringing, your early life. I read that you were one of four sisters. Not surprised, actually, knowing what you've done today and knowing that you were one of four sisters. What was life like around your house? I mean, was it obviously very heavy women around the circle and lots of opinions, I'm sure, but I'd love to sort of hear what impact you think that had on who you are today.
You know, it was amazing. I never missed having a brother. And, you know, my father, who was truly the king in the family, we all always served my dad. But my mother was truly a powerhouse. My mother and father both were instrumental in our lives. My father lived life with adventure and wonder and curiosity and really had a no-regret policy, taught us that life was just living in the moment. And we traveled together all over the world as a family, which kept us all so incredibly close. And as one of four girls, believe it or not, we were best friends and we were not competitive with each other. You know, we shared clothes. My sister and I, who's 14 months older than me, my older sister, we shared a room. And I have to say, we even shared boyfriends, not at the same time, but if my sister, you know, she might have dated someone. If it wasn't for her, I would take him. You know, I took her leftovers. And, you know, my other sister, Shireen, was a little younger than I was. And then my baby sister, Rachel, much younger than me. But they just wrote an article about my baby sister and I, and we were called the Power Sisters. And it was amazing because they compared and contrasted us of how similar we were, yet how different we were. And how similar, sharing the same values. And the story was so awesome. I love the story because they talked about how we both wear nice clothes, but my clothes were couture and hers were uber trendy. And I wore my dresses below my knees and she wears them way above her knees. And I go to sleep at 10 p.m. and she's just coming home and doing a wardrobe change. And I at the time was working in Hollywood and she was working in Hollywood, but I was more on the business side and she was in the celebrity side. I mean, it was just, we were all great friends. And
I love that.
Great girlfriends. And my parents did something so incredibly right, teaching us the good values and how we shared everything. And that is just what it was like being raised in a household. And for my father, we were his girls, but we also were great athletes. We were the boys he never had. You know, I could throw a perfect spiral football. And that's what being raised in a household. And my mother, she didn't have a pay job, but she had a full-time job, A, being an amazing mom, but she also was PTA president and did a lot of non-for-profit work. And then when we left the household, when we all went to school, she became the senior policy advisor for Pete Wilson. And believe it or not, she created the first conference for women in the state of California.
Oh my gosh.
And that was 30 years ago. I just found the agenda from that first conference. And it's the same topics that we are still talking about today in the Equality Lounge, which is pretty darn crazy.
That is absolutely crazy. Well, I read that you really say that most of your female empowerment really came from her, just watching her sort of do what she was doing. You know, I always think back on my mom and some of the stuff that she was doing. I mean, at that time, she was just a mom, right? She was creating art programs in schools in Scottsdale, Arizona to teach people about the masters. And it was, you know, again, like I was hiding half the time when I would hear that she was doing all these different programs. But to be able to go and do things that no one else was doing and disrupt in some way, it really truly is something that I think back on, that things can be done if we keep showing up and we're resilient. And it sounds like you had the same type of experience with your mom.
My mom is so incredible and she lives right down the block. She's 85 years old. She has more energy than I do at 60. And, you know, she lives life to the absolute fullest and was and is the most incredible mother, friend, community leader, activist, positive mindset, confidence builder. And, you know, it's all about mindset, truly, and really gave us that inner confidence and, you know, made us believe that we could do anything we put our minds to, and is still that today. And that's why she's ageless, you know, truly. She walks around the block and is young in every single way and is my role model and inspiration for who I am and who I hope to be. Grandmother, great grandmother. I mean, truly remarkable woman.
I love that. So prior to founding the Female Quotient, we'll get into that in just a minute, but you were the only female CEO of a top 25 global research company, founding and leading the online testing exchange. But I would love to hear a little bit more about that whole experience. And overall, you pioneered online research and started a company called OTX, but I would love to kind of hear about that experience and sort of what you were up against when no one was talking about online research.
Yeah, you know, I went to Barnard of Columbia University, and I saw a little ad on a billboard on the career bulletin board. I thought I was applying for an ad agency job. I thought that was kind of sexy. I had no idea that it was for market research. I didn't even know what market research was. And of course, I went to this job interview and there was four women in the company at the time working for a guy named Baldev, Dave Vadera. And they were eating frozen yogurt. And they were gossiping and talking about, you know, reading People magazine. I'm like, oh, I could do this job. And, you know, so of course I loved the job and fell into it and found out it was not a creative ad agency looking at ads. It was a market research company. So I fell into market research. I did not apply for a research job. I got a D in statistics. So I was the least likely person to get a market research job. As a matter of fact, when I sold my company for a lot of money and I was in the New York Times, my professor from statistics called me up and he says, are you the same Shelley Zales that was in my statistics class that just sold her research company? I said, yes. He says, shocking. Congratulations.
That's hysterical. Hysterical.
His name was Hank Nalbandian. And we're still friends today. I said, by the way, Hank, I have to come back and teach you how to contextualize data because you didn't do a very good job of it. And we're still really good friends today. He's now at a consulting firm. But anyways, so I fell into this market research company called Video Storyboards. We did storyboards research. And then from there, I went to a company called ASI that later got sold to Ipsos. And when I was at ASI, and this was traditional research, my first review, and I talk a lot about this, I got a terrible review. I thought I was the perfect employee. I came in early. I stayed late. I said yes to everybody. And I thought I was like, you know, genius. And of course, my review, typewritten, we had typewriters at the time, was like a 6-page typewritten report. The first 3 lines were, I was smart and I'm nice and I'm a team player. But the rest was, I take too many clients to lunch. I push, you know, the team out of their comfort zone. I'm not an order taker. I invent too many things and I'm not following the rules and all that kind of stuff. And they ripped me to shreds. And in the end, they put someone above me for me to report to someone else. And I had 2 options at the time. They wanted me to sign the review and agree with it. And I remember looking at my boss at the time and I should have said, you're right. But of course I looked at him and I said, this is the biggest mistake you're making in your life. And tears came down my eyes. And I said, I disagree with this review, but I don't have a choice but to sign it. And they put someone above me and I knew I was going to leave this company. That's how I got my name Chief Troublemaker, because from that day on, I knew I was going to break every rule and create new ones. And it was this moment of truth, which I call heartbeat moments. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Your head is supposed to agree. That's, you know, really the cognitive. But your heart is the emotive. It's that emotional moment. And I knew if I followed the rules, it would never work for me. I would never be able to be a mom because I couldn't stay the long hours. I couldn't travel. I wasn't going to be able to just be an order taker. I was going to have to create my own rules to thrive in the workplace. The second heartbeat moment was when the internet was starting to form and people were starting to do online advertising. Facebook was being created. People were starting to create websites. Brands were creating websites. And I started testing websites. And I thought, well, what if we migrate research from offline to online? But the only people online were wealthy old men with broadband connections. So I went to that same boss and I said, let's migrate research to the internet. And that boss said to me, it's too soon. There's no one online. And the next week I was on a panel with the chief research officer of Procter & Gamble. And so I'm on the dais, I'm on the panel, and my boss and my boss's boss and my boss's boss, man, we're all in the front row and I'm on the panel with Larry Mock, the chief research officer. And I'm whispering. And I come off the stage and my bosses all said to me, what did you say to him? What did you say to him? Because they were all worried about me because I broke all the rules. And I said, I just asked him, when is the right time to come and talk to you about migrating research from offline to online? Because you all told me that it's not the right time. I just want to know, when is the right time? And he said, come talk to me next week. So I said, we're going to Procter & Gamble next week. So my boss said, great, Paul will go, John will go, Ringo will go, and Star will go. And I said, but what about Shelley? I got the meeting, I am going. And they said, well, no, it's really a boys club. I said, well, if I'm not going, I'm going to cancel the meeting and you can all wait for the right time. And that was the end of that. I knew in that moment that I am so sick of waiting for the right time. And I'm so sick of all these men telling me who I am and what I'm going to do that I've decided I would rather be the boss of my destiny. And I left the company and I started OTX, Online Testing Exchange. And I became my own boss.
And what year was
and
this?
And I decided I'm going to create, this was in 2000.
Okay.
And I decided I was going to be my own boss. I was going to write my own rules because the rules of the workplace didn't work for me. And that if I was going to thrive, I needed to be my own CEO, because if I stayed in the corporate world, I would fail and I would keep getting in trouble and I would keep getting bad reviews and I would keep being wrong. And you know what, Kara? I was tired of being wrong. I wanted to be right. And I didn't want to be the exception to the rule. I wanted to create the new norm. So I created my own company and I wrote my own rules that would work for everyone. Because if it worked for me, it would work for everyone. And OTX became a phenomenon. And I actually pioneered online research. And I was the first in the world. And OTX had 250 employees. And the crazy thing is, I sold in the end to ASI again. Because ASI got acquired by Ipsos.
Crazy.
And I sold to Ipsos that acquired ASI. And so I ended up selling to the company that I left years later in 2015.
That is absolutely so crazy. It really just goes to show you, especially for, you know, the people who really have the vision. And when no one else saw that vision, I mean, sometimes you just have to be able to stay alive, right? And keep going and keep pushing forward and stand up for what you believe in. I think there's so many lessons in that story, Shelley. I love it.
But I didn't even have the vision. I just knew I didn't have a choice and I followed my heart and I had to believe in me. And the crazy thing is I needed $1 million to start my company. And at the time, my husband was a fellow in medicine. We didn't have the money. And I went to my father and my husband and I said, I need $1 million to start this company because I had to build the technology. I promised a young 20-year-old kid $1 million. I needed $1 million to build this technology. I said, I'll give you $1 million one day if someone buys into this. So build this on the fly. And I went to my husband and my dad and I said, I need $1 million. They were each going to give me $500,000 each. But I was afraid to take the money because I knew if I took their money, I would not take a chance. I would be safe. Building something new, you can't be safe. There was no textbook for what I was doing. I was building something that didn't exist. And I knew if I took their money, I would never take risks. And so I went to Nielsen and I said, I need $1 million for this idea. And so they gave me $1 million and they took 80% of the company and I had 20%, which was so dumb. But anyways, no regrets. And I gave a 20-year-old $1 million. I didn't take anything for it. And I mean, that was the story. So I had no idea what I was doing, but I had no choice and I followed my heart. And that's when I call them heartbeat moments. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. You got to follow your heart. Until this day, I will always follow my heart.
That is such a great story. So let's talk about how that led ultimately to what you do at the Female Quotient. Or I should even back up. How do you define the Female Quotient?
The Female Quotient, so the name came very easily to me. First came IQ, the Intelligence Quotient. Then came EQ, the Emotional Quotient. Now comes FQ, the Female Quotient. When you put women in any equation, there's a return on equality. And, you know, that really was what it was all about. And we are all about changing the equation and closing the gender gap. And, you know, as the only female CEO top 25 my entire career, I know what it's like being in the boys club. I know what it's like being an only and lonely. I know what it's like at 60 years old. You know, this is a long time ago, not having girlfriends in business. I was always at the top, especially in market research, without girlfriends. I had to always find my own voice, find my way, break the rules, and be by myself. And it was a moment where I wanted to bring market research into technology and market research into marketing and market research into media and market research into every category. And so I wanted to go to CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. And I didn't want to go by myself. I heard there was 150,000 people that went with less than 3% women. And I was so tired of going by myself to everything and having to break into this world of men. So I called 5 girlfriends and said, go with me to CES and we'll walk the floor together. And I said, and if you know other women, please invite them. 24 hours later, 50 women showed up and 2 remarkable things happened. 1, every single guy's head turned. And that's when I coined the phrase power of the pack. A woman alone has power. Collectively, we have impact. The second was I was surrounded by women just like me. We talked about work-life balance. We talked about imposter syndrome. We all had power of the purse. We had money to spend and we were doing deals with one another. And we were sharing the good, bad, and the ugly. And we were supporting one another. And that's when the girls' lounge, the opposite of boys' girl, the opposite of club is lounge. If there's a boys' club, now there's a girls' lounge. We created a safe space and it was amazing. And day 2, we were 100 women. Day 3, I had the penthouse suite at the Four Seasons. And we started doing our hair and makeup and not apologizing for being women. I mean, how often are women just acting like men? Because there was such a scarcity of jobs at the top. We were like sticking our heels in each other's head to say, move out of the way. I'm going to take that job. And we were acting like men because that's how we were trained to be. And then, you know, next thing you knew, I decided let's do these pop-ups at every big conference. And the girls' lounge became a phenomenon. And next thing you knew, I was doing 70 girls' lounges at big industry conferences. And I kept the name Girls' Lounge because I wanted women to get comfortable being women. Stop apologizing for being a woman. Own it. We need men, but we need women. We need the feminine. And I intentionally had hair and makeup so that nobody would say I'm embarrassed to do it. And we had girls' lounges for years. And then once women, 750,000 women later across 100 countries, started supporting each other across every industry, marketing, media, advertising, research, technology, sports, entertainment, TV, every cybersecurity, space, every industry, I decided to then evolve and call it Equality Lounge, bringing conscious leaders, Fortune 500 CEOs into the space. But the space was dominated by women, designed by women for everyone. And then we got invited to the World Economic Forum. And at the World Economic Forum, my invitation was, we want you to come, but you might not feel welcome. My head said, who wants to go to a space like that? My heart said, I have to go. And we showed up in a tiny little space. Today, 8 years later, we are the destination for equality at the World Economic Forum. We have every Fortune 500 come. We have the white badges that show up. Jamie Dimon comes. And we have the CEO of Cisco. We have the CEO of Salesforce. We have the CEO of everybody. And we own this space. And what are the conversations all about? It's a space designed by women for everyone. And the topics are how to close the gender gap. The World Economic Forum just published a report that says it'll take over 132 years to close the gender gap. Why? We created the internet in 25 years. We created a vaccine in 1 year. We put people on the moon in 10. Why should it take 132 years? We could close it in 5. It just takes conscious leaders. And that's what our spaces are all about. It's about closing the gap and sharing solutions for change collectively. And so what is the female quotient all about? It's about really collectively, transparently figuring out how we can close and rewrite the rules in the workplace so that all of us can thrive. And that is what we've been doing at the
Female Well, Coach. I absolutely love your leadership too, because I think you have just shown that putting spikes in the ground around a really hard thing when everyone is saying it can't be done, it can't be done, you are doing it. And you are really having the hard conversations and forcing leaders, other leaders, to have those hard conversations too. So the progress you've made is just unbelievable. So how do you get these leaders, I guess, to show up and improve closing the gap in some way? Like, how do you get them to do it? Are there quotas? Should we have these quotas? Should we not have these quotas? I've heard many conversations around that as well.
The negative with the pandemic is so many, you know, we talk about the great resignation. We are at a great time now. We're calling it the flipping point, which is a great moment in time because what we've been doing isn't working. It was a great break. The pandemic was a great reset moment, as far as I'm concerned, which is why we've just coined the phrase flipping point. We're at a flipping point moment, which means it's a perfect opportunity right now to rewrite the rules. And so we are now bringing conscious, and we call it conscious leaders. It's not about men. It's not about women. It's about conscious leaders coming together to rewrite the rules of the workplace. And that's what we are looking for. Who are the brave, the bold leaders ready to rewrite the rules? The rules of the workplace were written over 100 years ago by men for men because women weren't in the workplace. So it wasn't wrong. It's just time now to reset. And so that's what we are doing right now. We are working with a group and we're looking for a moonshot mindset group of CEOs that want to attract and retain the best talent, which we believe are the caregivers. We want caring leaders, and it's the perfect time for a reset. And so that's what it's going to take, because it's not very complicated.
No.
It needs to be a priority. It just needs a priority. That's all. Just like we prioritize, when you put your mind to something and you put your priority and you decide you're going to do something, you do it.
Yeah.
Look at what we did when we had this pandemic. We created a vaccine to save lives. Right? It took 1 year.
Yeah.
It's not complicated. We have the data. We know that women are paid 80 cents on the dollar, Black women 64 cents on the dollar, Latinas 53 cents on the dollar. The data is in front of our faces. Why are we not paying people the same amount of money for the same work? Why?
Yeah.
It is not complicated. Why are we not putting women in leadership positions? Why? Women are as talented, if not more talented and more dedicated. What is the issue? No issue. It's called prioritization and accountability. That's what it's called.
Totally agree. 10,000%. In terms of, I mean, you've accomplished so much and your progress is just unbelievable. I mean, since 2000 and 20 years, I mean, you can look back and look at all of the progress that you've made. Obviously, we have a little ways to go. And definitely, I think just having you doing what you're doing all day is just absolutely so inspiring. What would you say is the best advice that you've ever received? We have a lot of listeners all over the world who are listening to this, not only people who are thinking about, you know, second careers or third careers, but also people just getting starting out as entrepreneurs or thinking about, what am I going to do? I mean, the decks are stacked against me as a female. What exactly can I be doing? What would you say is the best advice that you've ever received that keeps you going every day?
Believe in yourself, number one. Follow your heart, number two. Status quo is boring. Number three, every one of us can activate change. Sarah Jessica Parker says it best in one of her films, trying to be a man is a waste of a woman.
I love that.
We're all relevant. Don't hide you. Like, you matter. Oscar Wilde, be yourself because everyone else is taken. Like, we all bring value to the table. And be positive. Positivity breeds positivity. Open your mind. People just think that things can't be done. Things can. Yes, can. No such thing as trying. Do. You either do or you don't, but go forward. Don't go backwards and don't stay in a circle. Push and impact others. Like, negative people, I can't deal with negative people. People that look at things that are wrong, don't look at things that are wrong. Look at things that are right. There's so much good in this world. Go for good. Actually, go for great. And apathy is just a waste of time. And have passion. Give me that passion. And I want to be surrounded by passionate, purpose-driven people. That gives me juice. And give people love and hope. Because that energy is infectious, and pay it forward with generosity, because we all need that. And give someone a hug. Everyone needs a hug and some love. We all need that.
It was such...
And take time for yourself.
Yes, I love that as well. Well, it was such a pleasure to talk with you, Shelley, and you are just such an inspiration on so many levels, and you, all of those things that you talked about, I mean, just really giving people kind of the lift that they need in order to know that they can, I think is your gift for sure. We'll have everything in the show notes too, but thank you. I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate your friendship and I appreciate everything that you do. It's so, so inspiring.
I am grateful for you.
Thanks again for listening to The Kara Golden Show. Please give us a review and feel free to share this podcast with others who would benefit. And of course, feel free to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Just a reminder that I can be found on all platforms at Kara Golden. And if you want to hear more about my journey, I hope you will have a listen or pick up a copy of my book, Undaunted, which I share my journey, including founding and building Hint. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thanks everyone for listening. Have a great rest of the week and goodbye for now. Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.